Krishnadevi Namo Namaha. So the Bhagavad Gita describes the sojourn of Arjuna from ignorance to knowledge. And as we go through chapter after chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this knowledge that Arjuna gains from Krishna directly on the battlefield of Kurukshetra leads to the process of surrendering to Krishna. He goes from a platform of an intention to act as he thought proper. Now, we often say Arjuna starts out sort of an illusion. Of course, it's, you know, Arjuna is an eternal, pure associate of Krishna, but he's placed in illusion by Krishna temporarily so that Krishna can speak the Bhagavad Gita. So what he thought proper was what? Not to fight. And it wasn't whimsical. It wasn't because of just sense gratification. You know, I'd rather go on vacation or something rather than be in this battle. No. He gives many good reasons in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Many good reasons. You know, dharmically, from the point of society, from the point of culture, of religious principles, why it's better not to have this war. But what was the problem? It wasn't Krishna's plan. Krishna's plan, he descended to this earth for several reasons, but one was to rid the world of all of the demoniac kings and all of the irreligious activities and irreligious leaders that were there causing so much havoc and trouble in the world. So it was his idea that this war should be fought, the Yadavas should be installed in power again against Duryodhana and his more demoniac, or, well, I guess demoniac's a little strong, but anyway, his definitely not so religious group. So he went from that idea finally to a position of realizing Krishna's position and fully surrendering to him. Then he acts upon Krishna's instruction and he fights the battle of Kurukshetra. So he is kind of an exemplar of one who goes from a state of ignorance or illusion to a state of knowledge. And of course, it's kind of ironic that Bhagavad Gita is spoken on a battlefield, you know, and it's actually advocating our hero, Arjuna, to fight the battle. And a lot of people think, how can that be spiritual? Because it's almost intentionally that way, structured in such a way that we can see sort of an extreme example where what you might not think is such a good thing is because of one simple reason, because it was Krishna's will. And Arjuna, as a pure devotee of Krishna, wants to fulfill the will of Krishna. So basically, the whole Bhagavad Gita, and basically, our philosophy of Krishna consciousness is about giving up our independence in this material world, surrendering our lives to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, that's not such an easy thing. And there are many, many people, as well, say, do not surrender to God. You can walk out the door and walk downtown and you can find millions and millions of, not in Alachua, but in not so many in Alachua, a few hundred. They really aren't so interested in surrendering to God, or Now, why is that? There's different classes of people. First of all, those who are actually opposed to God, actually atheists, those who are antagonistic, they want nothing to do with God. They think religion is some kind of fraud, or it's for weak people, or it's a crutch. Karl Marx said it's the opiate of the masses, religion. Those people, okay? Maybe those who just lack knowledge. They're not against God. Maybe they didn't go to church. But, you know, they're very absorbed in their material plans and their material activities and their livelihood and their families and their jobs. That kind of occupies all their time. And it's easy to understand that because the material world is difficult and people are struggling. People have to, Krishna says that, you know, he calls this karshati, a hard struggle for existence, which is here in the material world. And then there are those who partially surrender, those who really are devotees or trying to be devotees of God, but still maintain some separate interest. Many of us may be in that category. We're not quite there. We're trying to surrender, but it's difficult. We still have our own interests, you know, that are a little bit separate than God's. So we see the Bhagavad Gita talks about those who are opposed to God in 7:14, those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, knowledge stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. And we see that there are scientists and others who very much are opposed to God. I was trying to think, I could not remember the name, but there was a very famous scientist and author who wrote all these books that openly declared it's almost like war against God. You know, that, somebody remember him? He was a pretty well-known scientist.
Stephen Dawkins.
Who is it?
Stephen Dawkins.
Yeah, Stephen Dawkins, right? Hawking or Dawkins?
Dawkins.
There's two different ones. There's two scientists, one in Dawkins, one in Hawking. I can't. I think they're both pretty materialistic. Yeah, but yes, exactly. And I don't remember the name of his book, but it almost said something like the myth again about God or something, wasn't it?
What is
it?
God delusion.
Yeah, I mean, that's like open war against, you know, theism, against Krishna. The God delusion. You have a delusion if you think that there's God and you want to serve God, you know, and instead of having the wonderful life that he did in his wheelchair, right? Being completely crippled, being a quadriplegic, wasn't he?
No, there was two. There was
Stephen. Oh, that was the other one.
Stephen Hawking, yeah. Okay.
There were two of them, both atheists, pretty much, both scientists. But, you know, at any rate, moving on. Then we find that there are those who just, it's hard for them to surrender. They're busy in their material life. And a lot of it this comes down to is a question of what? Krishna calls pride. You know, we're proud in our own selves and whatever we can do. The little, you know, Prabhupada once said, you know, the pauper is proud of his penny, right? I'm totally poor, but I've got this new penny. And this is, of course, in a different time, and a penny probably meant something, you know, and it's proud of it. Or if you've got just a little bit, you think, oh, this is great. You know, I'm so well off. I have some tiny little ability. A tiny little one of six of Krishna's opulences. So it's very hard for those people. Prabhupada says the surrendering process is described very nicely. The first qualification is one should not be deluded by pride. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking he's the Lord of material nature, it's very difficult for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, we think we know what's best, right? You go anywhere to do anything and you seek out an expert. You know, if I need to have my air conditioner looked at or repaired, I don't try to go in there and start, you guys, you might, but I don't go into the air conditioning unit and start tearing it apart, seeing if I can, do maintenance on it. No, because I don't know anything about it. So call an expert, right? Obvious. You have some illness. You're not quite sure what it is or what to do about it. You go to a doctor. You go to a qualified medical practitioner of whatever your particular propensity is, but we go to experts all the time. Now we turn to spiritual life, and all of a sudden, no one's an expert, only me. I know best. It's the most difficult thing to understand in the world. This is, we're talking about the deepest metaphysical questions of the universe. Who is God? Who am I? What is the purpose of life? Oh, that's okay, I'll figure it all out. I don't want to listen to anybody. It's foolishness. That's pride. You know, we're proud of a little bit of knowledge. It does not get us very far. Okay. Then there are those who partially surrender. Maybe try a little bit and believe in God. Maybe even devotees of Krishna. And Prabhupada has kind of a humorous story that Prabhupada tells us about this once. It's the story of the farmer. And he's growing his grains. He's got a crop. He's got all of his wheat seeds. And he's got it up on a big basket on his head. And all of a sudden, just like right now, out of nowhere, one of our Florida afternoon storms comes up and a big wind comes and it blows all of the wheat seeds up in the air. Now what's going to happen? They're going to fall in the dirt and be pretty worthless, aren't they? How are you going to get all those little seeds out of the dirt? So it blows up in the air and the farmer says, Lord Krishna, I offer this all to you. You know. So in other words, since it's no longer valuable to him, I'll offer this to Krishna. This is kind of one for me, one for Krishna attitude, you know. I'll try to give something to Krishna as long as, you know, I'm looking out for myself a little bit. Now, that's very common in materialistic devotional service. It's offering to Krishna, but with some expectation of personal gain, that I'll get something out of it. And we all begin this consciousness. This is not something that we're saying, oh, this is somebody else. We're all a little bit like that, or at least we start that way in the journey of self-realization. When we go down the path of Krishna consciousness in the beginning, we probably all have so many material desires. In contrast with Arjuna, who is now completely surrendering to Krishna. So let's look at those who do surrender. What is that like? What kind of great souls are these? In Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Krishna says, Bhavanam Janamante, Janavanam Prabhajante, Vasudevam Sarvaniti, Samahatma Sadurava. They're Mahatmas. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Knowledge precedes surrender. Knowing me to be the cause of all causes, why do we surrender? Because Krishna is the cause of all causes. He's the supreme. He's the absolute. Such a great soul is very rare. So this is indicating it's not such a common thing. Some Mahatma Siddhartha, a great soul is very rare. So, you know, it's not that this is going to come out so easily all the time. And as we are involved perhaps ourselves in this journey of spiritual life, of trying to surrender, we might think sometimes it seems like this is very difficult and my going is slow and I don't know how much advancement I'm making. We have to remember the instructions of our acharyas, and because everyone faces these things. So Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar Instruction, has had three things that we need as we proceed on the path of spiritual life. One is utsaha, enthusiasm. We must be enthusiastic. We must be determined. We must be fixed on the goal. And third is dharya, patience. You have to be a little patient. It's going to take some time. It may take this lifetime. It might take more than one lifetime. But we're on the path. And once on the path, Krishna says, on this path, there's no loss or diminution. A little advancement on this path can protect them from the most dangerous type of fear. No loss. You're always going forward. In Prabhupada explains, it's like money in a bank account. You know, every bit, everything one does for Krishna, every bit of devotional service, every time you chant Hare Krishna, it's sort of going into a spiritual bank account, you know, that's all going to help us to advance in Krishna consciousness. And it's there eternally. It's not that we lose it, even at the time of death, even if we have to take another lifetime. We come in at that position. This is what Bhagavad Gita tells us. Whatever state of mind, at the time of death, one will take up at exactly the same point. That's what, 85? Mm-hmm. So, what's the result of the discerning process? What's the point? Where do we end up? What is the advantage? Arjuna's enlightenment is that he would become free from family affection, bodily attachment. Now, what does that mean? Not so much his own, but because everyone on both sides of the battle were his relatives, his teachers. This was very difficult. Can you imagine? Okay, you're going to go to war, and your main opponents are going to be your grandfather, Bhishma, it's going to be your teacher, Dronacharya, you know, your... this was not easy. Your relatives, your cousins, right? All of these people. So, but he would differentiate, there's a difference in what's natural affection and what's material consciousness. Natural affection is there. In this world, we all have some affections. We're not dull matter, right? Everyone we all experience, because the soul is filled with prema, because Kundalini, you know, the Ananda, bliss, is part of our very eternal nature. Some of that reflects here in the material world, because the soul is actually obviously pushing the body, the mind, the senses, everything, there's gross and subtle bodies. And so it's natural that there's love, that there's affection. But it should not become overwhelming. It shouldn't become so strong, the material consciousness, that's all we think of, and we don't think of our spiritual life. That we don't connect with the soul and our relationship with God. And both can be there in Krishna consciousness. You know, we simply have to be very good at dovetailing and learning how to use everything in Krishna's service, yukta vairagya, as Rupa Goswami says. So he regained full self-realization of Krishna consciousness. And then all knowledge was given to him because he was fully surrendered to Krishna. In 1873, almost at the very end of the book, Arjuna said, "My dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm, free from doubt, and prepared to act according to your instruction." So full knowledge meant, I'm willing to serve you, Krishna, however you want me to serve. In other words, not just how I feel like serving, but how do you want me to serve? That's the really advanced stage of Krishna consciousness that Arjuna exemplified. And it's more than a practical, it's more than a theoretical understanding. We have practical realization. And it's described what one acts like, what it looks like when one is really in the surrendered stage. And the six symptoms of surrender are given in Hari Bhakti Vilas, and that's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila. Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam Rakshiyate Vishvasho Gopritve Varanam Tata Atma Nishkepa Karapanye Sadvidha Sharanagati. You ever take a Sanskrit verse on your computer and you put it into your Word program and it gets totally scrambled? You know the Sanskrit? No? It just happened to me. I was trying to figure this one out. The six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, rejection of those things unfavorable, so accept those things favorable, reject those things which are unfavorable, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, knowing Krishna as the maintainer, full self-surrender, as we've been talking about, which means complete dependence on the Lord, and humility. Humility is a very important one, and that's like a whole other class, so I don't think we'll go too far down that road. But very, very important. And when one is most advanced, most surrendered, in the most glorious stage of spiritual enlightenment, that devotee is the most humble. That's the person who is not pretentious. That's the person who is not arrogant, not the person who thinks that I am so wonderful. It's actually, we see the examples of the six Goswamis. They're always saying, I'm the lowest, I'm the most fallen. Please extend your mercy to me. I'm so fallen that I should be the recipient of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, since he is Patitapavana. He's the deliverer of the most fallen. That's the mood of an advanced devotee. I was just reading something somewhere. I think it was in a commentary to Manishiksha by one of our contemporary God brothers, who was saying, Surya Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, that a devotee said to him, will I ever reach the stage of Krishna Prema? And Bhaktisiddhanta says, yes, you will, but you won't know it. In other words, it's not, now I have prema, now I'm advanced, you know, look at me. No, you know, you don't know because you're just feeling so humble and you're just feeling, but you're feeling intense love of God, intense surrender to Krishna at all times. So now, even in the beginning of spiritual practice, we begin taking shelter of Krishna. From the very beginning, how do we surrender? Well, first we surrender to the order of the spiritual master, right? That's the first way. How do we know Krishna until we become more advanced? Who's God? What does God want from us? Well, there are many ways to know. First of all, we read Krishna's words in the Vedic scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita directly speaks. He's telling Arjuna, this is what I want, this is what you should do. But even that can be difficult. Did anybody read a copy of Bhagavad Gita before you read Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, some of you? I did. You know what I got out of it? Nothing. I thought it was a nice book. It sounded really, I knew something spiritual was there. But I didn't know this meant that, you know, to become a devotee of Krishna. I read Srila Prabhupada's, it was clear. Clear as day. Immediately, I knew, this is it. Of course. Because I was so puffed up, I thought, hey, they believe the same thing I do. You know, No. They just say it a lot better. They had a lot more organized. Anyway, good try, Tamara. But anyway, Prabhupada gave us everything. And he explained it to us in a way that now we could understand. Yes, it made sense. Why? Because it's spoken from the lips of a pure devotee. Only a pure devotee of Krishna can give us the meaning of Krishna's words. And you say, how can I tell him about Krishna? I'm not a pure devotee. You're following a pure devotee. Good. It's good enough. You just repeat what your spiritual man, Prabhupada always says. It's just repeat what he said, and it's just as good what you say. You tell someone about Krishna, same as if, well, almost the same, I should say, as if Prabhupada says it. Because you're repeating. You know, and that is what the whole parampara is about. Parampara is about coming down from one acharya to another, down to this present age. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us a chant of the holy name. He came in a line 5,000 years directly from Krishna through his spiritual masters. You know, Ishvara Puri, Madhavendra Puri, like that, Lakshmipati. Then what? The six Goswamis. Six Goswamis were his main teachers, his main assistants, the ones that he delegated to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So, we say one should follow Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. So Guru is pretty obvious. Srila Prabhupada has given us all of this knowledge. Shastras are here. And what is sadhu? Sadhu means saintly persons. Now, I misinterpret that as two ways that we follow sadhu. One is that you know, the senior people around us. If I have a senior devotee, then he can instruct me, or she can instruct me, and give me some knowledge. They are sadhus, you know, and I can learn from them. I can learn from all devotees. They don't have to be senior. Sometimes a sadhu is a more junior person, but they have some knowledge, they have some realization, some particular insight. But usually we think of sadhu as the past acharyas. And in the Nectar of Instruction, it's described by Rupa Goswami that one of the favorable things towards Krishna consciousness is to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And Srila Prabhupada, the first thing he says in his purport is, previous acharyas means the six Goswamis. So their works are so important, incredibly important, you know, that they, you know, that they've written so many things, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami wrote a wonderful, wonderful book, I can't help put in a plug, wonderful book called Gopal Champu, and our very glorious Pranavavinda Prabhu is going to be doing a whole many days of seminars in Gopal Champu. Anyway, I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. This is Jiva Goswami, one of the six Goswamis. So, I mean, these are our acharyas, and we can learn so much from them. And we learn to be, by their personal example, humility and surrender. Because they were the exemplars of this. They were the most surrendered. Who was it, Raghunath, who offered obeisances to 10,000 Vaishnavas a day? Thank you, Sanatana Goswami. I just make this stuff up. I'm glad you know, thank you. Sanatana Goswami, how many was it?
More than 2,000.
Only 2,000.
More than
2,000, okay. Okay. That's right.
Take your place.
Yeah. Hey, pipe down you. Okay. So, let's go back to our topic. What is the real interest of the living entity? Because that's really what it comes down to. Why are we actually surrendering? Because it is in our best interest. It is the real self-interest of the living entity. Now, when we say our self-interest, I mean our kind of like, I don't know if it's capital O or whatever, but it means we, the Atma, the soul, the Jiva, that is within, the real self. It is the self's real interest to surrender to Krishna and engage in our loving relationship. Because surrender is not a one-way thing. Oh, I just surrender to God and God's the controller telling me what to do. No, not at all. Krishna is not only the loving father, he's the deepest, best friend of the living entity. He can be the parent, he can be the child of the living entity, he can be the lover, he can be in any of these rasas, these relationships that the living entity has with Krishna. But every one of them is based upon, ultimately, Krishna prema, loving relationship with Krishna. And it's reciprocal. The more we love Krishna, the more he loves us. But we can never love Krishna as much as he loves us. Prabhupada said, Krishna wants us to come back to Godhead many, many times more than we could possibly ever even want to come back ourselves. You know, so he wants our love. He tolerates that we have left him. We've come in this material world and experienced suffering. He doesn't want us to suffer, but he allows it to happen because it's the nature of this material energy. Which, of course, he also produces this material energy. But he does it with kind of a hands-off way. He's like not the really the part. It's kind of like, what do they call this, blind trust or something where you have a bunch of money? Think about this. What do you do? You put money in a... But you don't have any control over it, and somebody else manages it. It's kind of like that. So the material world squishes blind trust, and he puts Maya in charge of it. Right? So Maya's in charge of this material world, and he says, okay, you know how to manage it. Here's my rules. You know, take care of it. And he doesn't really get so directly involved, although he's in control of every single atom. And it says, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. So he's behind it. He's controlling it, he's maintaining it, but he also remains separate from it. He remains separate so he can engage in his primary activity, which is loving relationships with his devotees. All of his devotees, and it actually is every living entity. Every blade of grass, every tree, every bird out there is a pure devotee of the Lord who doesn't know it. Who is covered over and waiting somehow or another, Krishna's waiting for them to somehow all of us to turn to him and say, Krishna, I have suffered so much in this material world. Please let me now surrender to you. And Krishna says, yes. Yes, yes, my dear devotee, please come. And I will help you. And I will give you all protection. And I will give you all knowledge, all instruction. And I will eventually give you the deepest love, the deepest prema that you could ever imagine, which is beyond anything conceivable in this material world. It's described that the pleasure in this material world is like a drop of water in the desert, compared to the ocean of love in the spiritual world from Krishna. And there is some enjoyment in the Brahma-jyoti, in the personal understanding of Krishna's spiritual energy. And now then you can get a little bit more. That's described as the amount of water in a calf's hoof print compared to the ocean of water that's there in Goloka Vrindavan and the spiritual world in Vaikuntha. So that's what we want, and that's what Krishna wants. That's our real self-interest. A couple verses. Krishna says, those who are necessarily engaged in bodily conception and create an atmosphere of materialism are ignorant of their real self-interest. And that's from 5.6.19. Therefore, it's saying, Vagatam Nate Vidu Svartha Gatim Hi Vishnu. And that's from Prahlad Maharaj's instructions in the 7th canto, which is basically, the conditioned soul does not know that its real self-interest is to take shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So, then later, in the 7th canto, 15th chapter, it says, when the ultimate goal and interest of oneself, one's wife, one's children, one's relatives, and all other embodied living beings is one, this is called dravyadvaita, or oneness of interest. Now that's interesting. So it doesn't say that we reject everything. We say we include everything as oneness with Krishna, but not like we all merge into Krishna and become one big glob or something, or one, you know, amorphous, you know, spiritual mess. No. Oneness of interest, which means Krishna's desire is our desire, and our desire is Krishna's desire. Works both ways. Krishna wants to please his devotees as well, and Krishna fulfills the desires of his pure devotees, at least. So, that oneness of interest then comes about with the surrendering process. Boy, I'm going to have to jump ahead because I'm running out of time. One other point. Krishna never forces our surrender. It's a voluntary process for the jiva. At the end of the Bhagavad Gita, after all these instructions, after Krishna says, surrender unto me, sarva dharma pratyaja, may it mama come sharanam vraja, give up all varieties of religion, and just surrender unto me, have no fear. Then he says, thus I have explained to you knowledge, still more confidential, deliberate on this fully, and then do what you wish to do. Isn't that interesting? After all this, he doesn't say, now you must obey me. He says, no, do what you think. I've given you as much knowledge, it's your choice now. That's the free will of the living entity that is always maintained. Prabhupada says in purport, surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhood is in the best interest of the living entities. It is not for the interest of the Supreme. He's not saying do this because, you know, for me. Before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on the subject as far as intelligence goes. That is the best way to accept instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, on even a little bit deeper level, we can understand that Krishna, or the Super Soul, is most dear to the soul. This is from Krishna's instructions to the wives of the Brahmins. This is after the story and after they've come and they've rejected, you know, their sort of, what would you call it, smart Brahmin husbands. He's preaching to them now. And he's telling the wives, there are certainly expert personalities who can see their own true interest when you're unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service directly unto me, for I am most dear to the soul. So it's interesting. Krishna says, I'm the most dear person to the soul. You know, actually, the one that you love the most, that you are the most closest to, attached to, is me. And in the purport, it says, the Supreme Lord informed the Brahmin's wives, and only they, that all people recognize their true self-interest, to baked to the spiritual process of love and service to the Lord, where Krishna's Atma Priya, the real object of love for everyone. Now, I'm going to read a couple verses in a very quick purport by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. This is from his commentary of the 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, 14th chapter of Lord Brahma's prayers. This is 54 and 55. The verses are, therefore, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being, and is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exist. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. Appeared. He's not an ordinary human. He is damaged by the strength of his internal potency. So, through his achinta shakti, he can appear as though he is an ordinary human being. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as one of our great acharyas, says, this verse establishes the conclusion of the discussion. When one sees the truth, he realizes that the individual spirit soul is only an intermediate object of love. The final, highest object of love is Krishna alone. Brahma says Krishna is the soul of the universe and the super soul present in the hearts of all conditioned souls. A person loves children and other persons. Why? Because they bring pleasure to his own material body. In the same way, a person loves his own material body because it brings pleasure to himself, the spirit soul. There's a progression going here. Also, in the same way, a person loves his true self, his spiritual identity, because he brings pleasure to the super soul. The super soul is Sri Krishna, whose spiritual form is perfect and complete. The conclusion is that because Krishna is the highest object of love, the greatest love is felt through him. Thus the Vraja Gopis, he means the mothers of the sons, you know, the Brahma stole. The Vraja Gopis love Krishna even more than they love their own sons. It's kind of deep. But basically, he's saying that, as far as I can understand, we're all Krishna's origin of all of us. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Yes, we're eternally separate, Krishna says in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita. We're his separated part and parcels, but we are part and parcels. Krishna is the, you know, the Amsha, and we're the Amshi, or is it the other way around? At any rate, we are the parts of him. And therefore, it's natural that we are very, very closely attached to Krishna. And therefore, Krishna is our very deepest object of love. Because he's our very source, he's our very origin. We are part of him. We are coming from him. And that relationship, and why does Krishna have all these parts and parts of why Krishna created us? It's actually explained. It's very difficult to understand. We can't really understand it so much with our material mind, at least I can't, to be honest. But it's explained that he actually creates all of these different energies, his spiritual energy, the jiva, the tadashta shakti, to expand love. Right? In other words, because he has infinite capacity and infinite desire for loving relationships. Therefore, he increases and expands his capacity for love, because that's his very nature, his prema, by creating millions and billions of countless living entities. Each one of us who has an individual relationship with Krishna of love that is there. And he just wants us to reestablish that, to come back to him, to surrender to him, so that we can understand that loving relationship again. Okay, I'm going to read a final purport here, which is really nice, because this is an example of, we're talking about freedom through surrender. This is an example of the freedom of a pure soul. 1638 Bhagavatam. Sutta Goswami said, thus addressing Vyasadeva, Srila Narada Muni took leave of him, and vibrating on his Veena instrument, he left to wander at his free will. And then Srila Prabhupada explains all about Narada Muni. Every living being is anxious for full freedom, because that is his transcendental nature. This freedom is attained only through the transcendental service of the Lord. Illusioned by the external energy, everyone thinks that he is free, but actually he's bound up by the laws of nature. A conditioned soul cannot freely move from one place to another, even on this earth. What do you speak of from one planet to another? But a full-fledged, free soul like Narada, always engaged in chanting the Lord's glory, is free to move not only on Earth, but also in any part of the universe, as well as in any part of the spiritual sky. We can just imagine the extent and unlimitlessness of his freedom, which is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the association of the devotee is also free. One may be fortunate to have it, or he may not have it, even after thousands of endeavors. Therefore, in all spheres of devotional service, freedom is the main pivot. Without freedom, there is no execution of devotional service. The freedom surrendered to the Lord does not mean that the devotee becomes dependent in every respect. To surrender unto the Lord through the transparent meeting of the spiritual master is to attain complete freedom of life. Okay? Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
Questions? Comments? Or we'll take a shot at them? As you say, as you wish. Yes, over here.
Could you comment on where Krishna says, just give up all forms of religion and surrender directly onto me. Yeah. I shall protect you. Have no fear.
Right. And that's the famous Sarvadharma Parityaja in the 18th chapter. And Prabhupada often says that's Krishna's final instruction to Arjuna. So he gives him so many different instructions, right? He talks about karma yoga, he talks about jnana yoga, he talks about yoga systems, he talks about renunciation, he talks about tapasya, so many things. And he says, ultimately, give these up. This isn't the main essence. The main essence is surrender unto me, devotional service. Engage in my loving devotional service, and I'll protect you. You'll be fine. I'll take care of you. So another, and he also says, another place similarly says, you know, give up the flowery words of the Vedas. Well, that doesn't mean that the Vedas aren't valuable and that they don't mean something. It means, but don't get lost in all of the karmakanda and the rituals and like that, but get to the essence. And the essence is bhakti yoga. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Anyone else?
I just wanted to make a comment on the topic of surrender, if I may.
Sure.
Real quick.
Please.
Oh, thank you very much. So on the topic of surrender, because I thought about this a little bit recently, but so I once met a man when we lived at Gita Nagari, and he was a Mormon, and he used to bring Mormon missionaries to the temple, right, to just kind of expose them to different religions and so forth as they were doing their missionary work. And I got to know this gentleman quite well. He was elderly, and he became a Mormon later in life, but during World War II, he was a prisoner of war in Germany. And so he was explaining to me, he was, you know, if you're familiar with the history, as the Allies moved inland into Europe, there was the Battle of the Bulge. So basically, all the Allied forces were surrounded by what was left, the remaining strength of the German army. So basically, it was kind of like, we can either surrender, or we're going to be destroyed. We're completely encircled. So this idea of surrender is that when you surrender on the battlefield, there's no negotiation. There is no, well, I want this, I want that, along with it. And he told me, he said, I asked him, I said, you know, he revealed it, but he said, you know, actually, so they marched us far into where they were taking us to hold us all. He said, but actually, by surrendering, he actually made it home. If they had not surrendered, they would have been destroyed on the battlefield. They were completely, there was no way out. And that's really our predicament. You know, we can kind of poke and find little holes, and we can find little enclaves of our sense gratification, ignore, hide from Krishna. We can go to so many places, it's infinite. But until you surrender, your chance of making it home is really quite rare, if at all possible. So, just something to think about on a practical level.
Thank you so much. That's a wonderful example. Very, very good. It's nice. It's interesting, of course, and later the Allies did defeat them at the Battle of the Bulge. My father was in that battle, by the way, and so I heard all about it. Anyway, but, yeah. You were, and also, let's say you pick your battles, too, and you work from a position of strength. That's exemplified in the story of Gajendra in the fight with the crocodile, you know. In other words, that wasn't their time of strength, so that wasn't a good time for them to just get completely, you know, decimated or whatever. Anyway, a lot of things we can learn from that. Okay, anything else? Okay, enjoy prasadam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.